Hello and welcome. My name is Zach Weaver, and I'm the senior pastor at Liberty Vineyard Church. I'm so glad you tuned in to the sermon today. I hope that it blesses, encourages, and challenges you as you begin to explore the abundant life God has for you. If you're in the area, consider joining us for our weekly services, Sunday mornings at 10:30. We have lunch together, free of charge, each week following our service. Everyone is welcome. We're located in the city of Tucker, Georgia, a suburb of Atlanta. Directions and other information are available on our website at libertyvineyardchurch.com.
God, we just want to open our hearts and our minds up to what you want to do today, to your word, to your guidance, to your leadership. Would you just direct us, God, just reveal those places in our hearts and our lives where we need to hear from you and help us to just be ready to receive what you have for us today. I thank you that you love us and that you care for us and that you continue to shape us and guide us in our lives. It's in Jesus' holy name I pray. Amen. So, when my oldest daughter, Jillian, when she was, she's 9 now, nearly 10, but when she was about 6 or 7 years old, she got this doll, a very special, beautiful doll. I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be Snow White, but it was a porcelain doll. I don't know if you remember porcelain dolls. They're beautiful. They're well painted on, beautifully decorated, and she loved this doll. It was a beautiful doll. She enjoyed playing with it and moving, and she was so excited about it. And I remember one week she said, "Daddy, can I bring that doll with me to church?" And I said, "Sweetie, you can, but the floor here is hard, and it's if it falls on the floor, it's going to get broken." And she said, "Oh, Daddy, I really want to. Do you think I can? Please, can I just bring that doll?" And I said, "Sweetie, you can. But you've got to be super careful." And she brings the doll, and she's here in the church, and she's so excited, and she's showing it to people in the way that kids do. They get really excited, and she's moving and dancing around and showing everybody the doll. And then I hear it. I hear the sound that it's that unmistakable sound of breaking porcelain, shattering porcelain. And I remember the doll hitting the floor, and she's just overwhelmed with this. And that's the way it is with broken things. There's so much sorrow that's involved with them, so much sense of loss, of I can't replace this. How can it be repaired? You see, the doll was so broken that no matter how many times we fixed it, it would just fall apart. There was too many shatters, too many cracks. It wasn't one. And so you look and you just have this regret, not only regret that she dropped it, but regret that she had brought it and all of these things wrapped up in there. Breaking things and broken things can hurt. When they can't be repaired, sometimes it can feel like they're a waste, like they're trash, like they're simply a waste that why did this have to happen to this thing? Well, over the last 4 weeks, we've been going through the Gospel of John. And we're on our way to try to get to the resurrection story in John by Easter Sunday. And I pointed out last week, and I think it's worth mentioning again, that John's overarching theme in his gospel is that we would know who Jesus is. That we would come and we would see the man Jesus, and we would understand Jesus from the perspective of him as a man born here on earth and as God in the flesh, that we would understand the larger person of Jesus. And through the first 10 books of John, ten chapters of John, he moves really quickly, giving us big pictures. In fact, the first 3 years of Jesus' life are encapsulated in that first 10 chapters of John. And then we hit chapter 11. And in chapter 11, everything slows way down. And in chapter 11, we begin to get nearly a day-by-day account of Jesus' life. Last week, we finished up chapter 11, and we're starting today in chapter 12. And in chapter 12, we now get not only a day-by-day, but almost a moment-by-moment account of what's happening in the life of Jesus as he nears the end of his time here. So if we begin right at the beginning of chapter 12, if you want to turn there with me, it says, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. And they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining at the table with him. Mary took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard, and she anointed the feet of Jesus, wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas, one of his disciples, said, "Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? Why has it been wasted?" And he said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he would help himself to what was put in. Jesus said, "Leave her alone. She has saved this and kept it for the day of my burial. The poor you will have with you always, but you won't always have me." Now I want to put in perspective for a minute the value of this ointment, of this glass jar. Just like the doll, one of the disciples says, "What a waste. Why was this wasted in this way?" See, it had value. That perfume, that ointment, it had a purpose. It was a treasured possession. I want you to notice that it says in there that Judas says it could have been sold for 300 denarii. 300 denarii was 300 days' wage. A denarii was worth a day's wage. 300 days. This is basically a year's value, a year's wage value. Let's put that in modern terms. An average wage would be about $50,000 to $60,000. This is a $50,000 to $60,000 bottle of perfume. Nowadays, perfume comes with a little stopper at the top, right? You can squeeze out just a spritz of it. You can pour out a tiny amount. That's not what happened here. That wasn't the way that you could get into the bottle of perfume. See, the perfume was sealed with a wax seal, and it was covered across the top. And once that wax seal, there was only one way to get into it. You couldn't peel back a little bit. You couldn't pull the corner up off of it and just use some. It had to be broken. And once it was broken, it had to be completely used. It was completely now open to the air. It had to be completely poured out. See, that ointment was so expensive. So was it money wasted, as Judas said, or was it money well spent? What was the ointment's purpose? See, it all depends on your perspective. Sometimes we hold on to valuable things like a treasure in a collection. But in doing that, a lot of times we don't enjoy the real purpose of them to begin with. I remember a long time ago, somebody gave me a bottle of olive oil that they brought back from Italy. Fresh olive oil from Italy. And we put it in the cabinet and said, "This is really good, special. I want to save it for a special occasion." And I saved it. And I saved it, I saved it, and I saved it. And one day, I remembered that I had it, and it was time to use it for that special occasion. I had saved it, and I opened it, and guess what? It was rancid. It was completely worthless. This rare bottle of olive oil, and I don't know if it was really rare in Italy, but it was rare to me here. because I'd saved it and not used it like it was intended to be used, because I had kept it and treasured it and collected it and just held on to it, I had ended up just wasting it without meaning to. See, Jillian's doll, my daughter's doll, it broke. But it broke being used, right? It broke being played with. It broke being enjoyed. Jesus, he tells the people that day, as he often would tell the people, that they see the event, but you're missing the point. In verse 7, he says that she had kept it for this day of his burial. She took something of great value and from everybody else's perspective, used it on something frivolous, threw it away and wasted it. But it wasn't frivolous to Mary, and it wasn't frivolous to Jesus. You see, she took something that was once it was broken open, once that seal had been broken, it could no longer be redeemed for its original value. I mean, that's why Judas says, it could have been sold. Why didn't you sell it? And that means because she didn't just take it and crack open a little bit and pour a drop on Jesus. She used it all. See, she was all in with this. She poured it all out. She poured it all out at the feet of Jesus. It's no accident that John takes this story and this moment in the gospel to tell this story and correlates it with what the rest of this story is about. You see, this whole chapter of 12, this whole chapter 12 has one big overarching topic. And it's about broken things. It's no accident that Jesus puts this story here to set it all up. Because in a little while, he's going to tell another story himself. In verse 23 and 24, some men want to come and see Jesus. And Jesus, as he's prone to do, answers people in a way that doesn't really match what they ask. He says, "My hour is finally come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Truly I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Whoever loves his life loses it. Whoever hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. If anyone serves me, he must follow me, and where I am, my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him." A grain of wheat is an interesting thing. It has to be picked just at the point when it's ripe, just when it's at its peak. And the moment that you pick it, it's dead. But if it's not picked, if it's not crushed, it's not useful. You can leave that wheat sitting in the ground and do nothing with it and just try to hold on to it. It'll be completely wasted. Because that's not its purpose. That's not the reason it's grown. Jesus goes on as he's talking about this. He says, whoever loves his life will lose it, and whoever hates his life will keep it. And these words, love and hate, they're good contrast, but they also don't quite help us understand the full picture of what he's saying. The loving life, it means whoever cherishes life. Whoever takes that bottle of olive oil and loves it so much and holds on to it and forgets to use it, whoever cherishes it, it'll become a waste. But whoever hates his life, he says, he doesn't mean you're supposed to hate yourself. You're supposed to hate your life, that you're supposed to hate all things. That's not the word. The word means whoever loves his life less than he loves me will keep it. What Jesus is saying is whoever loves his life, cherishes his life more than he cherishes me, it'll all be for naught. You'll hold on to it all the way until the end. And you'll find out that it was completely spoiled. But whoever loves me more than they love their life, will find that they've used it exactly the way it was intended. Exactly the way it was meant to be. He goes on to talk about serving. He says, whoever serves me must follow me. See, all of these are things about laying things down, about giving them up, about turning things over. A servant is concerned not with themselves. A servant's concerned with who? The master, the one that they're serving. They lay down all of their interests for the sake of the one being served, just as Mary did. Mary took this cherished thing, this wonderful, expensive, beautiful thing, and laid it down at the feet of Jesus to serve him. Did she redeem it for its full value the way it would have been worth in the world? No. And in fact, Jesus says in one of the other Gospels, he says that wherever the gospel message is preached, this story is going to be told because of the sacrifice that she made for me. See, the life you have, it may be amazing, it may be wonderful, it may be benefiting to many people, but if it is more important to you than Jesus, it is utterly worthless. And it will be a loss. Jesus says, I mean, we've been living through this last week or two where if you have invested a bunch of money in the stock market, have you noticed? It's been going down and down and down, and they call it a loss each day. Our life is meant to be laid down, to be a loss at the feet of Jesus, so that he can pick it back up again. I was talking about the grain of wheat a minute ago, and that the grain of wheat, it's such an interesting thing because it's only useful really after it's dead. My son, who's six now, is very fond of saying when we go to get flowers for somebody, if I buy them for my wife or buy them for somebody else, when we go and pick flowers up at the store, he says, "Daddy, those are dead flowers, right?" I say, "Let's not tell mom that, but you're right. Those are dead flowers." And that's what he gets it. He said, "No, the ones in the pots, those are live flowers. These ones that you're picking, those are dead, right?" I say, "They are dead, but they're pretty, but they're dead." If we try to hold on to that wheat, you try to keep it from dying, you try to save it, and you try to keep it from falling to the ground, it'll be a complete loss. It'll just be a worthless thing. It won't fulfill its purpose. Jesus says in verse 27, if you look into that next section, he says, "Now my soul is troubled. What should I say? Father, save me from this hour? But it's for this purpose that I've come to this hour." For this purpose. What purpose? To become the grain of wheat. To become the alabaster jar. To be laid down. To be broken. Utterly and completely laid at the Father's feet. You see, with Jesus, it's all or it's nothing. That's the way he lived his life. It was completely going for it. Whatever the consequences, he said whatever God told him to say. He did whatever God told him to do. He was obedient. We talked about this last week, even to the point of death. It was all or nothing with Jesus. He was all in all the time. And he calls us to be all in all the time as well. That's the kind of people he's calling. It's what he's saying when he says the grain of wheat falls. And he says, if you are not all in, you're going to miss it. You'll miss the point. But thankfully, the story, it doesn't end there. It doesn't end with Jesus being broken. I want to revisit that grain of wheat story or sentence that he says. Do you remember what he said? Unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains alone. But what? If it dies, it bears much fruit. Last week, we looked at the story of Lazarus. We looked at Lazarus' death and the fruit that it bore in the life of everyone else. And we see it now. In verse 9, it says, "A large crowd of Jews learned that Jesus was there in Bethany. And they came not only on account of Jesus, but they also came to see Lazarus, because Jesus had raised him from the dead. Then he goes on down in verse 17. It says the crowds that had been with him when he raised Lazarus out of the tomb and raised him from the dead continued to bear witness. The reason why the crowd went to meet him was because they'd heard what he did. The story of Lazarus is so important to this idea of broken things, because we understand with Lazarus that with Jesus, that death has no power, that the grave has no victory, that dead things have new life in them, and that broken things have a new purpose. I want to read you a story. It may be a story you've heard before, but it fits right now. It's the story of called a cracked pot. There's a water bearer in India that had two large pots, each hung on each end of a pole, which he carried across his neck. One of the pots had a crack in it. The other pot was perfect and always delivered a full portion of water at the end of the long walk to the stream to the master's house, while the crack pot arrived only half full. For a full 2 years, this went on daily, with the bearer delivering only one and one half pots of water to his master's house. The perfect pot was proud of its accomplishments, perfect to the end to which it was made. The poor cracked pot was ashamed of its own imperfection, miserable that it was able to only accomplish half of what it had been able to do, what it had been made to do. And after 2 years of what it perceived to be a bitter failure, it spoke to the water bearer and it said, "I'm ashamed of myself and I want to apologize to you." And the water bearer said, "Why? What are you ashamed of?" And he said, "I've only been able for these past 2 years to deliver half of my load because of the crack in my side and the water leaking out all the way back to your master's house. Because of my flaws, you have to do all of this work and you don't get the full value from all your efforts." The water bearer felt sorry for the old crack pot, and in his compassion, he said, "As we return to the master's house, I want you to notice the beautiful flowers along the path." As they went up the hill, the old cracked pot took notice of the sun warming these beautiful wildflowers on the side of the path, and it cheered him some. But at the end of the trail, it still felt bad that it only leaked out half its load again. So again, it apologized. The bearer said to the pot, "Did you notice that there were flowers only on your side of the path, but not on the other pot's side?" He says, "That's because I've always known about your flaw. I took advantage of it. You see, I planted flower seeds only on your side of the path. And every day, while we walk back from the stream, you water them. For 2 years, I've been able to pick these beautiful flowers to decorate my master's table. Without you being just the way you are, he wouldn't have had this beauty to grace his house." You see, we're all broken in some way. Maybe it's something that somebody said to you a long time ago that caused a wound that hurt. Maybe it's a physical thing that happened to you in your life. Maybe it's a chronic illness. Maybe it's something that you've just believed, a lie that you were told when you were young that's just filled your whole life with this. When we come, though, we are born, we are broken. But see, Jesus came so that we can be made whole, so that we can be made new, but not healed to the point that we aren't the person that he made us to be. Jesus says, "For this purpose I have come, to this hour I have come." He says, "I came broken because you're broken. And the only thing that can heal your brokenness is my brokenness." Isaiah said that he was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. As one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our grief and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. He was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. With his stripes we are healed. And the Lord laid on him the iniquity of us all. You see, we are broken. Jesus was broken. And he was broken precisely so that our brokenness could be used in God's kingdom. I think a lot of times we worry about brokenness not being purposeful. That our brokenness, we wait for God to heal it, and we wait and say, God, this broken thing, I mean, why couldn't the bearer of the pot fix the crack? It was precisely that brokenness that had purpose, that had function, that had unique value in God's kingdom. See, that's the thing. Jesus says in here that it's time for him to be glorified. And he says, Father, glorify your name. And his father says, I have glorified it and I will continue to glorify it. I will do so again. How is he glorifying his name? Through Jesus' brokenness. Our brokenness is not a devaluing. Our brokenness is not the thing that separates us. It's not the thing that keeps us from God. It's the exact thing that we can use to glorify God. Because our brokenness is a unique thing to us. It's a unique thing that God has made, that God has put in us, that no one else has. Look at Paul. Look at Paul and Peter, both in the Bible. Paul was broken from all of the things that had happened in his life, all of the ways that it had gone wrong, over and over and over again. And yet God used him in a specific way, in a way that no one else could use him. Peter, who had denied the Christ, who is definitely wounded in these places from him, instead is used by God in the most extraordinary way. See, they watered in places that other people could not. Our brokenness is unique. It's special. It may not be what God intended for us in our life. He doesn't want us to be broken, but he sure knows how to use it. See, it's not God's intent to always heal brokenness. After his resurrection, Jesus comes back. He shows himself to the disciples. There was one disciple that wasn't there. Do you remember? Thomas wasn't there. He doesn't believe that Jesus actually came back from the dead. And what does he say? Until I see the scars in his hand, I see the piercing in his side, I won't believe. And then they're standing in the room one day, and Jesus comes in again, and he goes to Thomas, and he says, look, put your hand in that place. Put your hand on my side. Don't be unbelieving, but believe. Wait a minute. We focus on that story about the unbelief of Thomas, but I want you to notice something really important. Jesus has been resurrected from the dead. Jesus has been redeemed by God, but what? He still has all the scars. He still shows all of the scars. Couldn't God have healed the scars from Jesus? Couldn't those have been completely wiped away? Shouldn't it be completely clean and made new? The scars had a purpose. The scars were important. The scars were the defining moment for Jesus. The scars were the evidence of who he was to the people. Our scars, the things that have wounded us, the broken places in our lives, they're defining moments in our lives. They're things we'll never forget. They're remembrances of things that have happened, mistakes that have been made, things that we sacrificed, things that were lost, and they're moments that in lives that are transformed through the sacrifice of Jesus. Our scars And our wounds are a reminder of how God uses us and continues to use us. See, God has a plan for our brokenness. He has a plan for all of those. And his plan isn't always to completely heal everything and wipe everything out like it never existed. Instead, it's to look at it and say, you have been shaped just the way I wanted it. Just the way that you can be used in my kingdom. I have shaped you exactly for this purpose. Don't wish those weren't there, because those are exactly how I made you. I made you special. I love you very much. You have value and use in my kingdom. You know, we were just talking this morning about the story of Joseph. About Joseph and his amazing coat. Joseph went through some stuff in his life. Can we agree? I mean, Joseph is sold into slavery. Is, I'm sure, mistreated, but rises up and just as things are going well, is thrown into prison. Prison in these days, not a happy place. Not a place where everything is cared for and people are taken care of. This is bad. He's rejected by his family, lost, separated from everything he knows. And he goes through all of this stuff. I know he had scars. I know he had wounds. I know he was broken. But he comes to the end of his time. And do you remember what he says? I'll read it to you. He says, all these things you meant for evil against me, but God meant it for good. He meant it to bring about the saving of many lives, just as you're seeing today. You see, there's a purpose to our brokenness, a purpose to our wounds, a purpose to our scars. And what we need is perspective. We need to be able to see it a different way. We need to be able to look at the broken jar and not say, what a waste. And instead say, look what it was used for. We need perspective to say, my brokenness doesn't break me. Instead, it glorifies God. If we'll let him use it, embrace your brokenness. Let God use it the way he used Jesus, the way he used Joseph, for the salvation of many people. Like Mary, lay your brokenness at the feet of Jesus. Allow it to just become a blessing to him. So if you feel broken, if you can identify with any of that, come and have a seat at the table, because there's room for you there. You're in good company there. We're all broken. We all need Jesus. Let's pray. So God, as we come before you this morning and realize how our lives have been shaped by you. And that shaping isn't always pleasant, but sometimes is painful. And yet, God, you have designed specifically a purpose in mind for each one of us. We are living it out to this day. Lord, I pray for each one here who just is carrying scars and wounds that they've been ashamed of. Things that have defined their lives in negative ways. And I ask you to just transform their minds now. Lord, as you say in your word that you would just transform by the renewing of our minds, help us to renew this, to see it in a new light, to see it how you use it. Let us be like the pot that didn't see that it's watering the ground and creating the beautiful flowers. Lord, how can we be used in your kingdom to a greater degree today than we have ever realized? Change our perspective. Lord, help us to just embrace the life that you've given us, to embrace any of those broken things in us. Come in and just transform and make new and redeem those places, God. We thank you that you love us. We thank you that you never give up on us. I thank you for each and every one here, and I just ask your blessing over them. I pray that your hand would just rest on them, God. Your face would shine down upon them and you would give them peace. May you be glorified, God. I give you all of the honor and the praise in Jesus' holy name. Amen.